Hi FM, 101.9 megahertz of life.
This morning, I'm very happy to have back on the show, after an absence of probably a few years, Mr. Michael Settas, who has 30 years' experience in the private health insurance industry and is the Free Market Foundation's Health Policy Unit Chairman, and he's probably thus extremely well equipped to deal with a lot of the issues raised by Cyril Ramaphosa signing this act into law. Michael, welcome to Hi FM.
Thank you, Sarah.
Somebody probably summed it up as being the NHI, the National Health Insurance, as being unaffordable, unwelcome, unworkable, and unconstitutional. That seems a hell of a lot of negatives for a piece of legislation that's just been passed into law. Is it overstating the case?
No, not at all. I think it's probably not stating it hard enough. I mean, one of the things that really irritated me, if I can put it as such, is that this constant lamenting from government that the reason that they don't function, the public sector doesn't work well, is because it's underfunded and under-resourced. But that is simply not true. You know, if we compare South Africa's public sector to peer countries in the upper middle income classification, we'd spot on the average in terms of percentage spend on GDP in the public sector, and I'm talking per capita as well. So it's not just that it's, you know, it's on a per capita basis, it's there. But our health outcomes by comparison are awful. So the problem is we have now is a government who's saying they fail to manage the current public health system properly, not because of a lack of resources, but mainly because of a breakdown of governance and mismanagement. Mm-hmm. And now saying that give us a lot more money, but really a lot more, you know, almost double what the current public sector budgets, and then we'll build you a nice, fantastic, wonderful health system. The PAC record suggests that they're not capable of doing so. So for taxpayers to be asked to fund an enormous amount of extra money for a new, tiny public health system number two, I just don't think is feasible. The track record just suggests they're not capable of doing it. The constitutionality side, I think, is clear. They're going to be denying people their own choices. They're going to be denying, you know, of healthcare. They're going to be denying the private health service providers freedom to of their own careers or their professions, you know, because they'll be forced to work for the state and the NHI. And I can't remember the third leg. Unworkable, yes. You know, it's a heavily centralized policy. And I mean, if you look at health systems all over the world, the ones that work well are decentralized. When you centralize, you create this massive bureaucracy, just like any other massive bureaucracy, especially a monopolized one. Like this is going to be technically a monopsony, but let's just call it a monopoly. Mm-hmm. And all state-run monopolies are disasters. I mean, I'm not talking just South Africa. I mean, most state-run monopolies are not very efficient. They don't work well. So I just think it's a bad policy all around. I think on all three counts that you've raised, they're probably not being pushed hard enough that these are real problems.
One of the mantras that comes out of the pro-NHI lobby is that we're seeking to create equity or equality by through a basic universal healthcare system. And isn't that actually what we've got? It's just that we're not, from what you've said, we're just not running it properly. Everyone has some sort of access to health.
Yeah, and I think, you know, that's the point, is that actually the public health system is quite a significant asset in the country. It's just, you know, it has been run down and neglected, and it's now badly managed. But in actual fact, we have one of the most well-resourced public health systems of a developing economy. We should be doing way better than what we're doing now. And the lament from government is this constant narrative that, you know, it's because the private sector spends so much, that's why our problems are in the public sector. But there are other countries that have similar public sector budgets to South Africa, and they achieve way better outcomes. They don't have these disasters that are constantly in the press that we see in South Africa. I mean, it's very clear if you look at the Auditor General, we look at the Office of Health Standards Compliance. Office of Health Standards Compliance, you could pretty much call a clinical Auditor General, if you like, because that's what they audit public health facilities from a clinical perspective. And then you have the health ombud. The last health ombud, his term ended a few months ago, and he had scathing words to say about the public health system and how badly managed it was. So the evidence is there that it's poor governance and mismanagement that's causing the problem. Mm. But the NHI is focused entirely on funding, and that's all it is a revision of funding of healthcare. It's not actually a health system. in and of itself, because all it talks about is the money. It doesn't really talk about the issues of how to manage the system more effectively. So it's missed the mark entirely. And I mean, you know, to be cynical, I think you would want to argue why. And I mean, you know, many people are concerned about the level of corruption that's possible with this. It will be the biggest SOE by a long shot. It will probably be about 2 or 3 times the size of Eskom in terms of revenue. And the poor governance framework that's been outlined in the bill is also very weak. And actually, you know, I think in the face of Zondo and the recommendations that came out of there, this is completely flying in the face of what Zondo recommended. We should actually be insulted by this. Because if they're telling us that there's not going to be grand scale looting, then you know, they're not convincing. They're not convincing many people.
The sheer attraction of this amount of money at a centralized level has to, I don't think anyone thinks that it's not going to be a source of real corruption, but one of the practical things that worries me is that if all the purchasing is done at a centralized level to be dispersed down from a government, things that doctors, or say medication or equipment that doctors may need to use, they are going to be forced essentially to use what the government has bought for them. There is no distinction between where the population is, where the facilities are, what the general requirements may be in one area, which may differ to another. And that surely has got to compromise healthcare, because you know, for essentially a bureaucracy to dictate what doctors should use is maybe criminally negligent.
No, it's completely the wrong way to go about it. I mean, you know, I think a good example is the British NHS. You know, when they built the NHS in the late 40s, it was a centralized system like the NHS proposing. But, you know, they quickly learned that it wasn't working. And by the late 70s, early 80s, they made a conscious decision to decentralize the NHS. You know, today, the NHS looks nothing like it did 30, 40 years ago. And, you know, health outcomes improved in the NHS, waiting periods dropped. And it's all because you take that bureaucratic layer, that centralized bureaucratic layer out, and you put it down to doctors who are on the ground, seeing the patients, make them the arbiters of what needs to be done, what medicines need to be given, you know, what equipment or materials and stuff that they need. The doctors are the deliverers up here. They should be the ones deciding what and how, not some bureaucrat sitting in Parliament.
Just sort of along that line, one of the reasons that the government supporters of NHS say is, you know, we do a lot for the private sector. We train the nurses. And as far as I know, attempts by the private sector to help train nurses and increase the shortage and the quality of nursing have been stymied by the government. I mean, it's that sort of sly dishonesty that is really worrying. Surely, if the private sector can offer that sort of thing, it's got to be an attractive financial option for government.
Yeah, I mean, this whole point about, you know, that doctors are subsidized. I mean, but everyone who goes to a public university is subsidized, because the state subsidizes public universities. I mean, in terms of medical professionals, they all have to do community service and pay back. No other profession is asked of that. So if I go and study to become an engineer, I don't get asked to, you know, go work in a state-owned entity to pay back, whereas the doctors do. So in essence, they're the least subsidized of all the professions that go through public universities. The aspects are even more complex than that, though. I mean, you know, we now have 75% of people who pay tax. So, you know, as in above the tax threshold, 75% of those people claimed a tax credit in the last tax year. So that means they're medical aid members. So the same people who are financing public health system through taxes are also the ones financing their own healthcare, taking themselves out of the public system. So all money derives from the taxpayer. You know, the government to believe that it has any money or that it generates any income is, you know, I think Margaret Thatcher put it clearly many years ago to say that you know, governments don't have money. That taxpayers have the money and that governments tax them, you know. So that's a cheap shot, I think, you know, and I mean, certainly the one that cannot be used to justify why the private sector should now be nationalized effectively under state control, you know, can't possibly be justified.
I mean, one of the things I've felt, to use your word, insulted by, is the fact that, as you say, essentially you've got private people pulling out of the public sector with after-tax money. So the money, they've paid the money that the state wanted of them for health. So everything after that is private. So it's essentially a double payment to ensure that the crucial thing, particularly as one gets older, is available at a reasonable quality.
100%. I mean, it is a double payment. And, you know, I don't think that would be a problem for taxpayers if they were left to, you know, purchase, you know, be with the freedom to purchase their own healthcare. That's, you know, all systems work on that basis. Taxpayers finance everything in a country. So, but now to impose more taxes, a lot more, and then still say to the private sector that you can't have your own, you know, you can't have a choice. You must have the healthcare that we're going to provide. We still don't know what that is. Mm. In fact, no one can know what it is because they don't know how much money they can raise. You know, if we look at what the economists are saying, they're just saying it's just simply impossible. Nothing more can be raised. That we're at the tax limit in South Africa. So how this thing's going to fly, it's just simply unknown.
One of the things that concerns me is, you know, President Ramaphosa has sort of walked back a bit from what I think are fairly nasty statements about, you know, sort of the rich not wanting the poor to have the same benefits as them, and indicating that the rich are mainly white, all of which is just a slur. He's walked back a bit, and he's said that he's going to open talks and consultations to big business, who are very upset about the fact that he didn't take into account all their representations. Now, obviously, from my perspective, that's response is fairly naive. I mean, if you watch politics half carefully, you could be fairly sure that something like the NHI would be used as a political football in the pre-election season. But what worries me as a private citizen is that, first of all, you're looking at talks and consultations which essentially have happened through the public participation process. Organizations and private people have put in submissions, put in even alternatives to the government. That process has been done, and none of that has been taken into account. So now there's the sense of the possibility that big business is going to massage the bad bits, when in fact the whole thing should go, and they do not speak for us. No comment?
The problem with that is that the bad bits are backed into the act, and that can't be changed outside of another act of parliament, an amendment act. So it's not like a regulatory process that we could just sit and go through. And besides the fact, we've had these promises all the time. I mean, right up until the last minute of this bill, they were promising that they were going to make amendments to it, you know. I know that BUSA and B4SA were hopeful of changes. I must say, for us at the Free Market Foundation, we were always very skeptical. You know, we didn't believe they needed the policy to be this contentious thing of the rich versus the poor, because they can sell that in an election. You know, so they want that populist angle. And if they were to then change the act to something more pro-private sector, then they wouldn't have had that populist angle. So we were always skeptical that they were ever going to make any meaningful changes to it. It hasn't changed in very, very slight changes in 4 years since it was introduced. In fact, 5 years, it was introduced in 2019 to Parliament.
This has been talked about, white papers, green papers, for over a decade.
It started in 2007, sorry.
Yeah.
It was at the Polokwane conference where Thabo Mbeki was ousted. That's where NHI was born. So it's nearly 20 years old.
Yeah, and 17 odd years old. It's absolutely awful. I mean, because this, I suppose, is the crux of it for anyone, and why people may be prepared to pay for low cost options, which obviously wouldn't provide everything required by the government. But it's about exercising the choice. But B, it's about the fact that, you know, as a young person, you don't pay a great deal of attention. But as you get older, the whole issue of chronic disease and unexpected and potential high-cost hospitalization or treatment is the sort of thing that people may leave the country for.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, the thing is, we're already seeing the problem of immigration, loss of taxpayers to the fiscus. I mean, I think it was FTI Consulting who did some work on NHI, the financing of it. I think it was on behalf of BUTA, and they emphasized how just in the last few years, we've lost something like 300,000 taxpayers. you know, it's dropped from 5.8 million to 5.5 or something to that effect, around sort of numbers there. But it's going down, it's dwindling. And now, I mean, if you take healthcare away from people that they have their own choice around private, I mean, not only do you lose existing taxpayers, but I mean, how do you get foreign investment into a country when you're going to tell the executives of a foreign investor, your execs who are planning to work here will have to go to the public health system. They can't buy their own private. I mean, it's just another pick on the box of disinvestment, you know, to say that why would they, you know? Mm-hmm.
I saw a comment on a WhatsApp group from someone who'd fairly recently moved to Australia. And he said, as a private citizen getting healthcare in South Africa, but, you know, paying for private healthcare, gave you a much more efficient quality service than he'd experienced in a country like Australia. And so my sense is that generally, you know, the private sector has so much to offer in the way of assistance, genuine assistance to the public health sector. And it's essentially being almost, I guess, thrown back in the faces.
No, it is that, unfortunately. I think I think a very valid point was made by Adrian Gore in a comment in this last few days. And he said, we can't build a national health system by destroying the private sector. We have to do it by building up the public sector. Now, what they're trying to do is drag everything down to the level of the public sector. And that's not – so, yes, we'll get equity, but everyone will have equally terrible healthcare. Mm. You know, it doesn't help. We need to actually build the public sector up, not destroy the private sector. And, I mean, I think this is sort of standard lack of or trust deficit that exists between government and the private sector.
And to go back finally to a point you raised, and it's sort of one of my bugbears, because I'm a firm believer that a whole lot of problems, not everything, but a whole lot of problems in the management of a hospital can be solved by good management, a management that's prepared to lead and make decisions and take responsibility for those decisions, and fire bad people. It's not a magical formula. It's a common sense formula. Or am I wrong?
No, it's 100% true. I mean, you know, if the evidence is so clear that the governance problems, the lack of, you know, qualified managers in the public sector are a major part of the problem. I mean, you know, the Rahima Musa Mother and Children's Hospital, where Dr. De Meyer wrote that open letter, I think a year or two ago. And then, you know, the first reaction from the CEO of the hospital, who had been working remotely, by the way, for six months, you know, you're managing a hospital, but you're doing it remotely. You know, I mean, you don't even have to be experienced in managing a hospital to know that you can't run a facility like that remotely. You have to be there. So, you know, these are things that just, you know, are so obvious. The other problems, you know, things like, which doesn't really get spoken about, but things like moonlighting. Mm. This is where public sector doctors will keep their public sector full-time paid job, but spend most of their time in their private practice billing medical scheme members for their services. So they're earning twice, but they're not in the public sector to, you know, working where they should be and where they're getting paid for. So, you know, so often I think when you hear these stories about shortages and there are no doctors around, I wonder to myself, well, is it because of problems like moonlighting, or is it genuinely a shortage?
Mm.
Because the number of medical personnel in the public sector has improved in the last 15 years. So there are more doctors now per population. So even taking into account the growth of population, the ratio of doctors to population in South Africa now in the public sector is better than it was 15 years ago. Not a lot better in many cases.
Well, I think at the end, I go with your view that essentially we're largely being insulted. But on that rather dim note, let me thank you very much, Michael, for joining us at this heightened time of concern, and cast your vote.
Yeah, I think that's good advice. Let's cast a vote for someone who's going to listen. Thanks very much. Appreciate the time.